things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That looks so much that it's not happening now.
What they talk about
is and then so much of the history we have is because
so long we're on that train.
It's fantastic enough that we
Doge.
And we're back.
How you doing?
Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We both did some traveling. Joe, you were dangling from mountaintops, and I saw all kinds of pictures. I was at Niagara Falls and got to hang out with your Nikola Tesla.
Nice. You saw the statue, the bronze?
Cool, yeah. Got to, we watched a video in the Cave of the Winds, and they did a bunch of stuff on him there that was pretty cool. And I, the whole time I'm going, Joe would be in his heyday here, but where'd you go? What'd you do? Where'd you take Gus? First trip of the spring.
Went to Tennessee. Went to the mountains of Tennessee. Went to a pretty. It was not a resort, right? The campground was not, you know, boondocking or anything, but it was in the middle of lots of state park, a lot of really challenging.
We didn't have to catch and kill your own food.
Well, I could have. I saw some bear. I've never seen a bear up there.
So you came face to face with a bear?
Not face to face. Me and about 400 yards away.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah. There's a movie, an old corny comedy called Without a Paddle. And these dudes go into the woods. And the best scene in the whole movie is the guy, they come face to face, like feet from a bear. And the one guy standing next to the other guy, and he starts taking his shoes off. And the guy goes, what are you doing? He goes, I run faster with my shoes off. And the guy's like, you're not going to outrun the bear. He's like, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you.
You know it.
But so you had, you camped, obviously. I saw you were with some friends. What were the, give us the highlights, the rundown.
Well, let me tell you about this. Because earlier today, I had a little interview with the Boy Scouts. They came down and visited.
Beautiful.
We talked about scouting. And I had to come clean and tell them that I went on an 11-mile hike up the side of a mountains, and I was the least prepared that I have ever been.
Yeah.
Guess what I had? A Pellegrino and a granola bar. No knife, no rope, no canteen, no compass, nothing. Somebody was on the route. We were like, does anybody have a knife? And I'm like, oh, that'd be good to have a little pocket knife here on an 11-mile up the side of a mountain hike.
Joe, you're the headline. Like a WKBN, local business owner, lost, dies in woods.
That's it. That's
found what I was, found I was, with granola bar and Pellegrino.
And here's the thing. Like Deb said, Deb started stacking the deck because in this area, there was a bunch of like these really pretty granite rocks.
Uh-huh.
So in my backpack that really only had my Pellegrino in there, she started putting granite. So at mile one of 11, she started putting granite. So I had a whole countertop in my book bag for the first 3 miles. And then she started feeling bad. She was like, I'm going to take some of these out.
You're like, here, you carry this for a little bit.
Right, exactly.
That's fun. So you did a big hike. And
yes. The highlight. I mean, that honestly was awesome because like here, a couple things that happened. We got about 3 miles in. And you can go one way up the ridge or the other.
Yeah.
The way that we went was 75% uphill, 25% downhill. So we're talking with people who did the opposite route where they, went all the uphill and the rest of it was just gradual downhill.
Yeah.
And they were telling us how awesome this hike was. We were like, we're dying here.
Mm.
It was immense.
11-mile hike. That's
uphill.
It's like, a lot of
huge grade.
It's a lot of steps.
Yes, for sure.
Apple Watch would be very happy with you.
25,000 steps. It's the first time I pushed 25,000 steps.
I've gotten to like 18 to 20,000 in Israel when we've been touring and stuff like that. Cause you'll do 6, 7, 8 miles, walking. We went to Niagara Falls and we did the Buffalo Zoo and we hung out, had some buffalo wings, which was awesome to have buffalo wings in Buffalo. It's kind of cool.
Did it match your expectations of what buffalo wings should
be? So we did not go to, there's the Anchor Bar and Duff's are the two like original spots. We didn't go to either of those. Some people say they're the tourist spots. One was like a local pizza place and one was ordered from, another place. They were both pretty good. I wouldn't say like the best buffalo wing I've ever had.
You wouldn't
had.
Travel 300 miles to go.
I want to go to Anchor or Duff's and then make that assessment if that makes sense. But, so we had a blast. It was a ton of fun. Charlotte loved the zoo. The zoo was great. Got to see some polar bears and stuff like that. But then, Niagara Falls was cool. We had a 5-hour like bus tour that was guided. They walked us all around. You did the American Falls, the Horseshoe Falls, the Canadian side. We didn't go on the Canadian side, but you see it better from the Canadian side. But then we got to see the whirlpools, and they're the only place that has a level 6 rapid. There's one of like 8 places in the whole country. So if you do whitewater rafting, like 4s and 5s are like dangerous. they are one of like 8 or 10 places in the world that have level 6 rapids. And our guides said they pull out 20 to 40 bodies a year. Because people are like, oh, it's not that bad. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's the only place in the Northern Hemisphere that has a counterclockwise whirlpool. Because there's so much, it's right after those level 6 rapids, there's so much water that comes down, it actually pulls it backwards, which shouldn't happen in the Northern Hemisphere.
Like Australia, like the toilet's right, flowing in one
exactly.
direction.
Exactly, and so it's flowing in the wrong direction for the hemisphere, but it's because there's so much energy and water, hence why they built power plants, why Nikola Tesla went there, and all that. The other thing that we found fascinating, and I actually shared this before my sermon, before we had Ty preach Sunday, I said to the church, I said, you know, we went to Niagara Falls, and I did not know that it is one of the largest breeding grounds for seagulls. Had no idea. So we go, you get on this elevator, you go all the way down. I don't know how many stories it is, but it's down pretty far because you're starting up where the falls come down, and then you go pretty much to the bottom. And it's called the Cave of the Winds, and you go through this little tunnel, and you come out, and you can literally walk up almost to the bottom of the falls and take really cool pictures and stuff. It was awesome. Really neat. You got soaked. Fantastic. But we come out, and we watch our guide, and he puts his hood up. I'm like, what's he doing? And we come out, and I tell you, if there was one seagull, there was 100,000 seagulls. They were everywhere, sitting on nests. And he said, this isn't even prime breeding season. In the next couple weeks, he goes, it'll be even more. And when their eggs hatch, he goes, it's insane. He goes, in the peak breeding season, there's just one, I don't know, maybe 8 foot across paved path. He said they have to power wash it 3 to 5 times a day.
That's gross.
Bro, there was poo everywhere. The kids kept touching the rabbit, like, stop touching things. I was like, and yeah, it was quite, I have a video I could show you later. It was pretty, there was a lot of seagulls. So my son Graham, when we were at the beach a couple years ago, I told him, I said, bro, I said, if you catch a seagull, I'll give you $10. And it kept him occupied for hours. He was chasing them all over the beach and stuff. And now at home, he knows if he catches a bird, he gets $10. So he hangs out under our bird feeder and tries to snag them. He hasn't caught one yet, but he's looking at all these birds. And I see in his head, you know what? I could catch more than one. Maybe I make some money.
Tackle.
And, you know, get a pretzel or something like that and hold it out there. But it was a fun experience. The kids had a blast with it. And it was a perfect day. It was like 58 degrees. So it wasn't like hot, you weren't like sweating walking around, but the sun was out, it was beautiful, and it was awesome to see, you know, something that majestic and powerful.
You know, it makes you feel small, don't it?
Yeah, well, the American Falls have 100,000 gallons of water a second or a minute going over the side, I don't remember, and the Horseshoe Falls that touch the Canadian side, they have 700,000 gallons of water, and it's just insane, the volume of water and the speed. And yeah, it was very beautiful, and just a great time. You know, the kids were like, oh, our favorite, you know, favorite part was swimming in the hotel pool or like whatever. But you know, yeah, we got pictures, we'll say, hey, we took you there, you didn't appreciate it, you know,
later.
Yeah,
much later.
So but the thing we have to talk about today, you yes. know, as great as our time away was, we have to talk about free speech. That is the topic that is on everybody's lips. Everybody on Twitter is either super excited or freaking out. There's no in between. Nobody's like indifferent towards this. You know, people are either like, I'm canceling my Twitter account, moving to Canada, I can't believe this, you know, fascism. And then on the other side, I'm like, oh, well, thank God. Like it's going to be a free speech platform again. I guess I'll reactivate my Twitter account. And I tweeted for the first time yesterday in 3 or 4 years. You know, I look at that and I look at free speech in general. And so I'd like to talk in general about free speech. We've done this conversation maybe 2-3 years ago now.
Yep.
But to get into that a little bit, because we have a culture that is not absolute towards free speech. They want their speech to be free and everybody else's to be regulated, right, which is not free speech. So talk a little about your philosophy on free speech and in general, what you think about the Twitter stuff. I know Elon's your boy.
Right.
So, yeah, talk a little about what you're thinking.
All right. So two things. Like the first thing is I'm a libertarian, of course. And so that I'm sort of willing to pay the price for, you know, having indecent or things that bother me sure. be said around me for the sake of making sure that it is free for everyone, no matter what.
Exactly.
Just a matter of time before someone disagrees with what you say. Yep. And then you're you're parsed out. And I don't ever want that day to come. Second thing is, for I don't like the fact that people with money can so easily wrangle complete industries. Where I like Elon, and I think his intentions are pure and he's noble. What if he wasn't? What if it was, you know, what is it, Wario, the Mario's, you know, the evil
counterpart,
guy,
sure.
It comes up into $100 billion and decides, I'm going to snatch this up. And there's really not much.
Well, that's what we have now.
For sure.
What you have at Facebook and YouTube and elsewhere.
But that part scares me that is so easily, you know, could happen.
Sure.
I want it to be harder to do that. I want to take over an institution of that scale. I want it to take longer, and I want the cost to be a little bit higher, where you can't consolidate so much power. Because even, you know, like even when the people who are against, you know, it's pretty noble when people say that the hate speech they don't want to be on Twitter. You almost agree with them to the point where that shouldn't be, it shouldn't exist, right? But since it does, you need sort of like a counter pendulum against it to make it balanced out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I you know, when I look at you know, the Twitter thing's great because I happen to agree with free speech. I think the market should be open. But what you're saying is the pendulum could be true, and somebody on the other side that I philosophically don't agree with could go out there and buy a company that I like now and take it in a totally different direction that I wouldn't like. And you're saying that that shouldn't be so easy to do.
Correct. Yeah. I've played in world markets where they have a different playbook than you. It's the Wild West. So if you want to get a sense for what decentralization and Wild West is, it is not a good place to play in. So let's just say Twitter goes this route and they remove all of the barriers of what you're allowed to say and not. What that turns into is way different than the experience, where you might not agree with there's some stuff that they went a little bit too far. The anarchy part of it, the one that there's just no rules, is equally as unpalatable.
Yeah. Well, I know some of the changes that Elon's talked about doing, you know, in passing, or, you know, if this ever happens, years ago in a TED talk or whatever,
right.
You know, when he's talked about his principles, I think the open sourcing of the algorithms is huge for trust and credibility. It lets everybody know, here's the rules we're playing by, instead of, well, you don't get to see that. We'll tell you who wins the game.
Right.
And that's what people distrust about it. And especially, you know, when you see so many people from a particular slant and belief system that you may agree with or not agree with, you know, some of those people that were, you know, quote unquote banned from Twitter, I don't agree with them, but I don't think they should be banned. And I think that's the tension where it's going to be very interesting if the former president returns to Twitter. The Babylon Bee had an amazing post. It was Donald Trump sitting there with his cell phone saying, I can't wait to post my 278,000 tweets that I've been journaling since I've been, since I've been banned. And whether he comes back or not, I think is irrelevant to the principle at hand. And a lot of people are, you know, kind of doing a lot of straw man arguments and stuff like that. But ultimately, you know, what it boils down to, all right, it's now a private company.
Yes.
So it can do what it wants. And that means I may not like what it does, but all the principles he's espousing are all the things that for me, I'm like, man, like, yeah, I want to have a space where I can say what I want. And it's, you know, you can't kick me out.
All right. So let's do better, worse, the same. I want you to take something that they hope they make better, some way you think it's going to get worse, and what do you think is going to stay the same?
Well, I think he's probably going to – Elon's smart. I don't think he can make the changes he wants to make unless he makes some huge shift in personnel. You know, and I don't think he's afraid to fire people, but – you know, I forget the stat. I read it somewhere. It was like 98% of the employees at Twitter donated to the DNC or Democratic candidate. Like when you look at that, like that's not just a little unbalanced.
Right.
And I don't think he's going to be able to shift things back to a more neutral ground when your scale's tilted that way. So I think there's some personnel changes that have to come. Doesn't matter what principle he wants to change from the top, the people executing it can slant it.
Can I interrupt you on that?
Sure.
This is the part that's crazy. I mean, this is a company, right? A company should not have an ideological slant. Like, mm-hmm. a computer company does not need to tell you what their politics are.
Joe, you mean the desktops that you fix are not registered Democrats They're or
not.
Republicans?
No, not at all.
Wow.
Yeah. So, okay. I interrupted you, but.
No, yeah. So I think that's got to be the first pin. He's got to balance those scales. I'm not saying this so everyone has to go, but when you're that far slanted, there has to be a shift. I think
you can't have bias that doesn't.
Correct.
Okay.
So at some level, you're going to have that. I think if he makes good on his promise to be transparent, I think that's what everybody's looking for. There's a lack of credibility to some of this stuff. So to just pull back the curtain and let everybody see, this is what was done. These were the algorithms that were there. This is what we're doing in the future so that you can buy in, so that you feel like I can play the game now. I know the rules. I don't think that it will be the wild, wild west of free speech. I don't think you're going to be able to threaten people. I think there will be some parameters that he'll put in place, and some people on the right will think he's gone too far. But I think at some level, he'll have to free speech inside of these contexts. I think it'll be much broader than it is currently, but he's going to have some sort of boundaries. And then, you know, maybe some stuff that I dislike. I've heard rumors that he's going to get rid of some of the advertising and not, kind of allow for advertising and make it more of a paid subscription service. I think anytime you attach paid, you want to be the town square, which was a free place that anybody could go to. And then you want to make people pay to show up at the town square and use their voice for free. I think that's an interesting, none of the other social media, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, charge. So maybe there'll be a free level and a different level. But I just think that puts an interesting twist that I don't know if I'll like, on the free speech town hall kind of, town square model, like, hey, this is what this is. It's for everybody and everybody should be able to say anything, but for a small fee, but you know what I mean? Feels kind of dirty.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's what we have to agree on. Like this is the real question, because I think through all of this, this is going to be what either makes it work or not work. Central authority. What is the authority that decides? So you have one model where you have the tyrant, the person that has ultimate authority. He says, and
as long as they're benevolent. Yeah. It's a good thing. Right.
Now, if you, like me, trust nobody, even if I like you, I don't trust you, then there has to be a decentralized where right. It is a mob rule democracy. People decide what is real and what is not. You give the choice to the people to dig through themselves, where some things that are in line are cast out of line because majority rules.
It's tough because you can still have the tyranny of the mob.
Tyranny of the mob, but is it a better tyranny than the one guy
no.
if you don't have a
The mob is fickle, man. Rome says the mob is fickle. The mob can be downright worse than, a tyrant, at least. And I said this about Donald Trump when he was running and everybody was, he's going to start World War III and all the stuff that he didn't do that everybody threatened he was going to do. I said, here's the thing. You may not like him and you may not even like and agree with all of his policies, but that guy likes himself too much to fail. Like he's been a successful business person. So in that sense, for me, I don't think, there was kind of two arguments on the left. Everybody said, oh, he's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. Or he was this devious guy who was planning with Russia to take over the world. And it's like, you can't have both. Either he's an idiot or he's this mastermind. I happen to think he's a pretty good business person. Probably a narcissist. And I don't think you get into some of those things.
Right.
I can't evaluate that. It's not my area of expertise, but he likes himself. That's for sure. I mean, his name's on every building that he owns. But in that sense, like I can wrap my head around those motivations, if that makes sense.
Right.
I can deal with, all right. Yeah. He tweets too much. That's annoying. Some of those things, like I get it. Because over here, I can justify that when you have the mob and they can be swayed and they can be pushed and stuff like that. And you see that with all the political correctness and stuff like that. Rewind 25 years and how far the public has been pushed simply by the narrative of the mainstream media and all of that stuff. And so I actually think the danger of the mob is worse than the individual. The individual is curtailed with Trump. I mean, think about it. His the people around him said, that's a horrible idea. We're not buying Greenland. You know, like some of those things that he would just say, and everybody like, oh my gosh, why did he say that? He said that because he's Donald Trump. He's a real estate guy from New York. So he's big, verbose. People didn't like that about him. Fine. But the people around him curbed him. Even the other side that hated his guts curbed him with silly investigations and stuff like that, that they drummed up themselves, which has all come out. But at the end of the day, like, you're able to curb that person. Once the mob takes off, you get steamrolled. Salem witch trials, man. Like, you start going down that path, and that's a scary place to be.
Third one is anarchy, where nobody said there are no, the rules are that there are no rules.
Yeah.
Which you have tyranny.
Yeah.
You have mob mentality. You have anarchy. So those are the three basic premises. There's a fourth, right?
Are you going to say blockchain?
No.
No.
I'm not going to say blockchain.
I think the blockchain is going to have something to do with this. I think everything Elon does, because you can do so much on the back end where you have the decentralization of authority with Ethereum and some of those platforms. I think you could come up with a system via the blockchain that allows it to be decentralized.
A percentage.
I don't think it'd be the whole thing. There's a piece
that it solves, but sure. in the totality, it doesn't do everything.
Yeah,
it
makes
some things
better. It's not a silver bullet.
But the fourth thing is, would be what I would do, it would be to model it after what the founders of this country did. So basically everything corrupts, right? Voltaire all the way to whatever. And so if you know the burn rate of how long it takes for something to corrupt, you make its cycles short enough that you cast off the people before they establish power. So I started off this segment with how easy it is to sort of buy into this company. Mm-hmm. That's too fast, right? If there were corruption, it was too easy to drag it in your direction, right? And so if the next not great guy can come along and do the same thing. But let's just say it was beyond your attention span. You had to really want it and had to be really hard for you to get it. Then you make it out of reach, even for the person that could. You create a burn rate outside of the area that anybody would try to accomplish.
You're talking about like term limits, like in Congress.
Exactly. Yeah. Make it so that the effort of doing exceeds what the benefit of being there. So let's just say you get to be on the stage for 30 seconds. What would you be able to expense for that 30 seconds? It has to be short enough that you're only willing to extend yourself so far in order to get that stage.
Let me ask this question. Sure. Because I know there's a fine line between safety and progress.
Yes.
So if you don't let somebody be there long enough, they're never going to get anything done.
Correct.
And if you let them be there too long, you get comfortable in that spot and you end up corrupting yourself. And you not all the time, but a lot of the time, that's the case. And so, like, you know, you talk about with Congress, like, you know, you look at that and you see people that have been in Congress for 40 years and stuff like that. And you're like, wow, everybody goes, that's too long. But what's too short? Like, is it 6 years, 8 years?
Well, let's change the noun so we're not talking about politics, so we can actually look at this rational. So we did this in two industries. First industry is utilities and like cable internet.
Okay.
Right. So a cable company is not going to run $2 million worth of cabling and coaxial cable for 10 residents. Right. The only way they'll do it is if you allow them to be exclusive for 20 years. Right. They can make their money back over a longer period of time.
It's a big investment.
So you ask yourself, over time, should you shorten that or lengthen that? What's too much time to give them to recoup their investment? And what's not enough time? If it's not enough time, nobody will do it. And you'll keep having to bump the line until somebody says yes. Yeah. You don't want to go too far. And then everybody says yes, because it's just such a good deal. Like the drug companies are the same thing.
Right.
You get exclusivity on a drug deal way longer than your research is doing. If you make $300 billion and it costs you $8 billion, that's too far, right? Because people would have said yes to $10 billion if it meant it was more than what your investment was.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And so you're saying that Twitter should have some sort of, I know I'm going to use a political word here, some sort of Congress or their board of directors has to turn over every so often. Is that what you're kind of getting at?
Yes. And it's malleable. So whatever's working. So it might be you serve a term of, 12 volunteer board things. You can only sit there for 12. And if that's too long where you see people getting comfortable, then the next time you make it 11 and it shrinks and grows depending on the fluctuations of it. That's what our founders did, was they took big risks on things that were intended to keep corruption at bay, no matter what those changes were. So you're not memorizing a rule set more so that if avoiding corruption or avoiding comfort or avoiding centralization, you got to be malleable enough to change the terms until that stops happening.
So I'm curious because you're obviously referencing the Constitution and all of that, and obviously we have people view that document very differently. And so in a company like that, you set a process like that up, and you know, if you look at Congress today, can't get anything done. So do you run the risk then of not, you know, the not producing for the shareholders at some level, because you know, realistically, CEOs that from the top down, if Joe wants to walk into Youngstown Computer and we are no longer fixing this type of computer, we're not, Joe gets to do that.
Right.
Joe doesn't have to go to a board meeting, doesn't have to go to a committee, doesn't need a vote. It's Joe's company. So at some level, are you robbing a company like Twitter of that of progress, saving the, hey, well, we don't want to risk this, but in actuality, it doesn't matter if you don't risk it because it ain't going to be a company in 4 or 5 years because you're just going to stall out growth.
Well, that's a good debate. I mean, think about like what the current tyranny did.
Right.
It spawned about 20 different social media sites that would never have taken root had it not done for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to say like the problem is what caused the innovation, not necessarily the rule set. There are always going to be problems.
Yeah.
So, for instance, a while ago, we tried to regulate internet service providers because it costs got out of control. It was getting too expensive for certain people. So they're like, hey, let's rein it in and set a cost control on it. Well, you could argue that saying, okay, well, no, nobody's going to innovate through it because now your prices are set. There's no way that someone's going to put infrastructure in if they can only make this back. So what happens? They start launching satellites into space. I'm like, hey, we're just going to do a different thing. Well, the problem spawned the innovations. We contained it like more people were going to run fiber optic and we were going to stifle it somehow when it grows no matter what. It'll outdo you or outmaneuver you no matter what. So I think the
innovation... You're talking about Starlink particularly.
Yes, right.
Have you used your Starlink?
I have. And in Tennessee, it was great.
Oh, okay.
But I think the innovations in government are actually opposite of what you think. So I think that stifling and that gridlock is the innovation. You take a bunch of really wealthy people that are perfectly connected that could go unlimited corruption, and you put them in a thing where they waste all of their time and stifle
waste all of our money.
Well, that part could be probably improved, but at least you're containing people who otherwise would be doing much worse things than what you could do in Congress.
So do you foresee, prophecy is always an interesting thing, but do you foresee with the current political structure, the pendulum swinging and it correcting itself? Or do you see it devolving worse? Because I've heard people on both sides of this where they say, you know, the stalemate that we're in is just going to get worse, and it's going to get more tribal, and it's going to be state by state, Florida versus California. You know, you're just going to continue to devolve in that sense. And I've heard other people say, yeah, but it's actually going to bring some stuff to the head, and the American people will turn and vote how they're going to vote, and that'll shift one way or the other.
I can't picture the thing that's going to change it. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't see, like, if you're seeing something flow on something, you think it's going to hit a root, or you're going to think it's a rock or whatever, and you're going to see momentum stop in that direction. Like, energy's there, you know. Distrust is there.
Yeah.
I mean, it can move forever, as far as I'm concerned. But I don't think the thing that's going to stop it even exists right now. It's going to have to be invented.
Interesting. So what happens in a deal like this? So this is the other thing that, like, you know, obviously there were filings with the SEC, and there's probably a ton of legal and paperwork, and some attorneys are getting very wealthy off this deal.
For sure.
Is this a 3-month process? Do you know anything about the actual deal?
Yeah, there'll be a couple months. I think it'll be 6 months before legally it's, you know, it's in another person's, you know, purview. But I think, like, for all intents and purposes, the people who are going to quit and people who are going to be detached are going to happen really quick, within a month. So you're going to see the landscape take shape way before the actual ownership is finalized.
Gotcha. And so then once that ownership's finalized, obviously, you know, I've heard that Elon raised money, so there are other people involved in this. What does that look like? Like, obviously, he's not going to be CEO. He's going to hire somebody, you think? Or you think he'll step in as CEO?
I wouldn't if I were him. I wouldn't get, I mean, he got 9 companies now, and all of them are going to take lots of attention. So he needs lieutenants like it's nobody's business. So if you were to say, who's Elon's second in command, you don't even know. Like, that person doesn't exist, or at least so he doesn't publicize that he exists.
Yeah, yeah.
But that so when you know when that takes shape, it's a private company now. So it's basically a piece of paper that designates who the big owners are. Thankfully, the other owners are a bigger stake than Elon. So maybe those people will be more of your like-minded CEOs or executives. So
yeah, it's just a fascinating thing to watch. What do you think happens? You know, obviously some people are going to leave, some people are going to stay. I think it's a very interesting indicator to watch the meltdown a little bit on one side of the political aisle, because it kind of tips your hand. Like, you had a stranglehold on this thing. You no longer have control. When you don't have control, anger is the next step.
Right.
And so now everybody's feeling this control slipping through their hands, whether it's news media and others. Like, you know, it's just very interesting to watch, you know, Jeff Bezos buy the Washington Post, right, and nobody said anything. They're like, oh, that's a good thing, because he happens to agree with a certain side of the aisle. And then Elon steps in, and this is like fascism. Like, you know, he's going to destroy democracy. Like, this is horrible. What do you think actually transpires? I know Jeff Bezos made a couple of tweets I read early this morning, back and forth, wondering about China's involvement and some of this different stuff. But he backed off it in succession there a little bit.
So I recommend the West Coast has extremely talented people. Even though we sort of put them in a box as hyper political, there's some real big talent. I listened to some of their artificial intelligence talks, and they really do know what they're doing. Their end, I might disagree with, but their actual, the practicality of the innovations and the sciences that they're using are spot on. Mm. So these people are not going to just go do nothing. They're not going to start delivering papers on the weekends.
Yeah.
So I think that tribalism where you know, you had some Republican social media spawn off of that. I totally think that there's going to be hyper-liberal social medias that are going to compete with that. So I think you're going to decentralization just because that spite is happening.
Yeah.
The Republican ones were spite. The Democrats one are going to be spite as well.
Do you think it's a good thing?
Yeah, I do. The more the better. Honestly,
yeah.
I hate single entities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there were 19 Facebooks, I would love it.
Mm. Bring back MySpace.
Yeah, let's do that. You could probably buy it for about $10.
Yeah, I bet. You had to have your top friends just right, Joe. Or
see, I never participated. Yeah. I had one, but it was so stupid to me, I didn't do it.
Yeah, definitely was silly. So are you buying any Twitter stock?
I'm not.
No.
I'm not in the market at all. Like zero shares of any stock.
Yeah, I don't have any. Several people were like, go out and buy Twitter today.
I bought some Ethereum, though.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. It bounced a little bit. It's been kind of, you know, I'm watching.
Yeah.
Waiting. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Increasing your positions, right?
Yep. $5 a day.
I love it.
That was you. You said that. Cool. I'm excited to be back on Twitter. I'm excited to see what direction he takes it. I think it's a fascinating experiment. But I do agree with your one caution at the beginning. Like, this opens the door for other groups to get together and be like, well, we're going to go out and buy this organization or this company.
Yeah, because think of it. If there's one ship, it's a huge target. If there's 20 ships, who cares if somebody takes over one of them? You still got 19 of them that can, you know, in the aggregate, defend against them.
Do you think that the government will push to regulate tech after this?
Would that be freaking silly? Like, of all of this,
I'm just saying, like,
you're probably right.
I hate that I'm probably right.
Yeah, but I don't think about that yet.
Yeah, I can't imagine they won't.
Right?
I don't think it'll go through in the current form.
Like, I don't think they stop anything from happening. What usually when government gets involved, they create an interference. They don't blockade. Mm-hmm. So, like, if the FAA wanted to make SpaceX's job really harder, they deny permits, but they can't deny permits indefinitely because then they get a bad reputation.
Right.
So they delayed 6 months worth of permits for Boca Chica so that Elon just moved all of his stuff to Florida where they already had a working permit. Right.
Yeah.
So who looks bad in this? Forced that. What would happen if they forced Elon to go to a whole different freaking country with all of and brought a bunch of money to their market? How bad would the FAA look? They would look terrible. So.
Right. No, totally makes sense. I think it will be interesting to see how this all shakes out. I'm excited to see, you know, who steps back into Twitter and what that looks like if people get unbanned. I'm interested to see the algorithms. I'm imagining there's going to be some Project Veritas videos and some different stuff.
All right, so here's the deal. This is something interesting. Have you done Truth Social Media, by the way? Have you joined or whatever?
I haven't. I'm on Getter a little bit.
Okay.
It was kind of, for me, so I tried Parler when it first came out. I tried Getter, a couple of those, and it was just kind of like, I don't know. You guys are all saying the same thing. Like, it's not, like, I want to be in a room where people disagree. Like, yeah, that to me is the fun.
Well, let me talk through the sciences of these new things, because this is sort of like you're good at. Okay, so let me describe this. So I joined Truth Social Media because when an algorithm is really young, you can do things to it to see how it functions. Sure. Just as it passes around. If you get an algorithm,
like with TikTok right now.
If you get one that's old, like, you just get diluted and you can't tell really how those things are functioning. You got to look at Twitter as probably a series of 1,000 different algorithms. So even when they open source it and you can see the algorithms, they're layered. So you can see this mini algorithm that tries to put people who are, I don't know, that are from a certain state. Well, when you look at it, it's like, oh, okay, well, what? How's this relevant? But it's tying all of those different mini macros together. The useful stuff happens. But when you're on Truth, you can say, use a word and watch to see how that disseminates and how you get passed around and how you get responses and how you get, you know, integrations. You can see what it's going to become. If it's a thoughtful algorithm that's going to be useful in exposing popular people and not so popular people, or if it's skewed where rich and powerful get all the say, normal people get no exposure. And I'm watching like some of these, like Twitter is terrible for the brand new user to come off of a whatever and get anybody to see or notice them.
Sure.
But Truth, I could be a nobody from nowhere, right? And somehow people see my stuff because it's such a thin algorithm.
That's the way
TikTok is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. TikTok's
Instagram's
pretty well
the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, either way, however it shakes out, I agree with you. I hope there's more. I hope the government doesn't regulate it, but I feel like they're going to start crying. They're going to attempt. Whether or not it goes through, who knows?
And a lot's going to be dependent on his first moves. Like, if he hits the scary things at first, like
he doesn't strike me as a guy that's just going to sit there and watch it.
No.
I think it's just going to be like, all right, everybody up against the wall. So only take a second.
Everybody that when he brings back some of these banned entities, people are going to pay attention to who he chooses to bring back. My recommendation is that he fixes the math formula and let the people who were caught in those nets bob to the surface. Don't specifically seek out, say, here's some things that should have never been, cut them and see what happens. But if he takes individuals and like says, I'm releasing you, I think that's all wrong and he's going to get killed for it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Interesting. Well, I'll see you on Twitter maybe.
Yeah, right.
I'm back on Twitter, so it's good.
All right, next time, brother.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us.